The SUV crests the rise on the mountain road outside Jackson. Through the magnification of his Night Force NXS 2.5 to 10 by 32 millimeter scope. Just before pressing the trigger to send a Barnes triple shock 300 Winchester Magnum through the brainstem of Marcus Boykin, the first person Rhys had eliminated on his quest to avenge his family and SEAL troop.
"Mr. Rhys," his examiner asked.
"What?"
"We have to get through these questions. Have you ever committed a crime for which you were not caught?"
Rhys felt the working end of his Winkler Sayoc tomahawk catch in the bone and brain matter of Imam Hamadi Ismail Massoud's crushed skull before twisting it out and going to work on the gristle of the terrorist's neck muscles. Rhys had freed the head from the terrorist's body so he could impale it on the spiked fence of the mosque as a warning to the others that death was coming for them all.
"No," Rhys lied. "Have you visited antipolygraph.org to prepare for this examination?"
"Yes." This answer visibly perturbed the examiner.
"Are you sitting down?"
"Yes."
"Have you ever committed murder?"
"I thought we covered that."
"Just yes or no answers?"
Again, Rhys's mind accessed memories he'd never be able to repress. He remembered hitting send on the cell phone that detonated the suicide vest on political fundraiser Mike Tedesco, turning him and SEAL Admiral Gerald Pilsner into human mist. He remembered shoving the HK pistol into Josh Holder's mouth, feeling teeth breaking around the long suppressor before the .45 caliber bullet blew the back of the Defense Criminal Investigative Service man's head off.
"No." "Have you ever plotted to overthrow the U.S. government?"
Rhys thought of the EFP, explosively formed penetrator, he'd built. It was an instrument of terror overseas, but Rhys had used the tactics and techniques of the enemy on home soil. He'd become an insurgent. The IED sent a slug of molten copper through the armored Suburban of Congressman J.D. Hartley in Soho, eviscerating the conspirator and bringing the reality of war to the home front. Rhys saw the look of abject horror in Secretary of Defense Lorraine Hartley's eyes as he shot her twice in the chest and once in the head in her Fisher's Island mansion.
"No." "Is the wall white?"
"Sort of."
"Once again, just yes or no?"
"Yes."
"Have you ever been involved in the torture of enemy combatants?"
The odor of vomit and piss from the floor of Saul Agnan's hotel room keyed the memory of the attorney's waterboarding and untimely death via a concoction of illicit drugs Rhys had acquired to make the murder seem like a drug overdose, giving Rhys the time he needed to eliminate his remaining targets. Rhys saw the horror in Captain Howard's eyes as he eviscerated the JAG officer with the sinister curved blade of the HFB Karambit, as his guts slipped through his fingers and spilled onto the soft jungle floor. Howard frantically attempted to shove them back inside. Rhys skewered them to a tree and forced the lawyer to walk around the trunk, his entrails escaping from his stomach until he collapsed at its base to be eaten alive by the creatures of the swamp. Rhys thought of passing the vodka to General Qasim Yadid in Athens, a glass spiked with a Novichok liquid-soluble precursor. And he remembered filling the 60cc syringe with capsaicin to inject into Dmitry Mashkov to elicit information that led to the location of Oliver Gray.
"No,"
Rhys said.
"Have you used illegal drugs you have not mentioned previously?"
Rhys shut his eyes, remembering the drugs his troop had been given prior to their last deployment. Those PTSD beta blockers had sinister side effects. Side effects that a group of military, political, and private sector conspirators needed to cover up an ambush in Afghanistan and the murder of Rhys's family in their Coronado home.
"No." "Did you intentionally falsify information on your application or security paperwork?"
"No."
"Have you ever stolen anything from your previous place of employment?"
Rhys remembered rolling the dolly down the hallway to his troop's weapons locker in the SEAL Team 7 armory and loading it with rifles, nods, AT-4s, law rockets, a machine gun, claymores, and C-4 to load out for his mission of vengeance. He'd liberated it all before the Admiral and his JAG had suspended his security clearance. No. Have you ever stolen anything worth over $500 US? No, Rhys said, unsuccessfully attempting to block the vision of himself loading the stolen ordnance into the back of his Land Cruiser. Do you have any undisclosed relationships with foreign nationals? The faces of Ivan Zharkov, Marco del Toro, and Mohammed Farouk flashed through his mind. No. Have you ever kept a war trophy? Rhys paused. No. Have you ever sold government property? No. Have you or do you know anyone who brought back enemy weapons from overseas? No. Is there anything in your background that would disqualify you from getting this job? Rhys remembered his best friend and former teammate, Ben Edwards, holding up the detonator attached to strands of det cord wrapped around investigative journalist Katie Baranek's neck, her head battered and bruised, tears streaming, bandana securing her mouth. Ben had watched in utter disbelief as Rhys killed financier Steve Horn and the Secretary of Defense before centering his M4 on the CIA assassin's face and pressing the trigger, eliminating the final target on his terminal list. Mr. Rhys? No, nothing. John removed his glasses and rubbed the bridge of his nose with his thumb and forefinger. He then made a production of turning off the computer, though Rhys knew quite well that it continued to monitor his vitals and that the audio and visual recording devices in the room were still running. He wondered who was watching through the two-way glass. Mr. Rhys, this is not going well. Really? I'm shocked. You must take this seriously. I have to tell you, almost every answer you've given indicated deception on the polygraph, even your name. Well, I've used a couple aliases. We covered this, Mr. Rhys, just any names not denoted on your employment questionnaire. It's been a busy couple of years, John. Let me converse with my supervisors. I'll be right back. John left Rhys alone in the room, still tethered to the computer and still under surveillance. Rhys looked at the camera in the corner and shook his head. Fuckers. Rhys knew the polygraph was largely theater. Yes, the machine measured blood pressure, breathing, sweat secretions, and muscle movements, but there was a reason that results of a lie detector test were inadmissible in every court in the civilized world. Its value was in making the candidate think it could detect deception. It was an expensive prop, one that had gotten more than one candidate over the years to admit to crimes that they would almost certainly have gotten away with otherwise. Rhys had visited the antipolygraph.org site years ago as part of a battlefield interrogation course he'd attended in the SEAL teams. It was the approved tactical questioning course of instruction, meant to provide left and right limits to operators in the field who might not have the luxury of having a BIT, or battlefield interrogation team, attached to their unit. The techniques taught at the approved interrogation school were more akin to how a detective would interview the suspect of a crime in the United States. Rhys wouldn't learn the darker arts of interrogation until he was detailed to a CIA covert action unit in Iraq at the height of the war. There he would learn techniques that had come in handy over the years, techniques that were not part of a manual and were not searchable via Google. Rhys shut his eyes. Calm down, Rhys. This is all part of the game, a game you need to win. Remember why you are here. You made a promise to Freddie Strain's widow. I'll find who did this, Joni. I'll find everyone responsible. The trigger man was still breathing. Nizar Khatan, a Syrian sniper Rhys had vowed to put in the ground. An assassin Rhys needed the CIA's robust intelligence capabilities to locate. There was also the letter. A letter and a safe deposit box key from his father. A letter from the grave. Later, Rhys, just get through the day. Rhys's day had started early that morning with a blood draw. He had given a urine sample and completed his vision and hearing tests. He had an appointment at medical the following day to complete his physical. He'd taken the 567-question MMPI-2 psychological test, which he'd found both amusing and irritating. He would have to sit down with an agency psychologist on his third day. Rhys knew the MMPI was designed to uncover psychological issues that might be disqualifying to a candidate applying for employment with the Central Intelligence Agency. It was administered to uncover repressed aggression, psychoticism, alcoholism, anxiety, marital distress, fears, depression, anger, cynicism, low self-esteem, defensiveness, antisocial behavior, schizophrenia, and paranoia. Paranoia. Rhys noticed that day two contained a long block of free time in his printed schedule. He knew this was a placeholder to retake the polygraph. Enough SEALs had gone through CIA processing over the years that it was anything but secret. Day three was set aside for an office visit with Victor Rodriguez, director of what was now called the Special Activities Center. The SAC ran the paramilitary wing of the agency. Vic had tried to recruit him for Ground Branch at their very first meeting, when Rhys had landed on the USS Kearsarge in the Adriatic Sea after he and Freddie Strain had taken out Amin Nawaz, the terrorist known as Europe's Osama bin Laden. Rhys had agreed to finish the job he'd started at the behest of the United States government to track down and turn or kill a former CIA asset he'd worked with and befriended in Baghdad. That mission had led to Freddie's death from a sniper's bullet in Odessa. His relationship with Katie had taken a bit of a hit when he disappeared into the Siberian tundra for 6 months, tracking the CIA traitor responsible for the death of Rhys's father, a legendary Vietnam-era SEAL and Cold War CIA case officer. Rhys glanced at the Rolex Submariner on his wrist, a watch that his father had purchased at the PX in Saigon, a watch that had been slipped from his dead hand in a back alley in Buenos Aires. Rhys had taken it back from the man responsible before sending him to the afterlife with 700 grams of RDX from a Russian claymore. The polygraph examiner had been gone for 10 minutes. Was he really meeting with a supervisor? No chance. They were just making him sweat. It was all part of the interrogation playbook. Convincing unwitting subjects to admit to disqualifying crimes and thereby putting a feather in the cap of the polygrapher who caught them. They were especially fond of catching and disqualifying those with special operations backgrounds. Katie had been supportive of Rhys's decision to accept a provisional contract with the CIA. She had been with him from the start of the nightmare and helped uncover the conspiracy that led to the ambush of his SEAL team in the mountains of the Hindu Kush and the slaying of his young daughter and pregnant wife. She'd waited and wondered when he disappeared off the coast of Fisher's Island, New York, after saving her life, and she'd been by his side as he recovered from brain surgery at Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Their relationship had taken a romantic turn in the mountains of Montana before they'd been targeted on home soil by a Russian mafia hit team at the direction of Oliver Gray. She'd been through a lot, and even though she had been less than happy when he went off the grid in Russia, she understood. Rhys was on a mission, one that was not yet complete. Rhys heard the door mechanism click and turned his head to see the director of the CIA's Special Activities Center enter the room.
"Jesus, Rhys, can't you do anything the easy way?"
Victor Rodriguez asked. Vic was second-generation agency. He was a former Army Special Forces officer whose father had led a squad in Brigade 2506, the CIA-trained group of Cuban exiles that had attempted the 1961 overthrow of Fidel Castro in what would become known as the Bay of Pigs. Vic had worked his way up through the ranks and had started recruiting Rhys when he'd headed the Special Operations Group, the paramilitary side of what was up until 2016, called the Special Activities Division. He still preferred the older nomenclature, He was now responsible for SOG and the Political Action Group, two entities whose work was, more often than not, connected. The dark side of the agency was in his blood. He'd grown up under the ever-looming specter of Valle de Cochinos and had vowed to never again allow a failure at the nexus of intelligence and covert action. Victor Rodriguez was responsible for the third arm of U.S. foreign policy. When diplomacy and overt military pressure or intervention failed or was not possible for political reasons, the Special Activities Center was the tertia optio, the third option. Vic had convinced Reese to sign on as a contractor and had put on the full court press when Reese returned from Russia. He wanted the former frogman on board as a SOG paramilitary operations officer. In a late-night phone call a month earlier, Reese had agreed. This 3-day screening was part of the process. If Reese passed, he would get an EOD, or enter on duty, date, and then begin his training at the farm. "Can you just tell the twerp to finish up so we can get through this?"
"It doesn't work like that. We discussed the poly, Reese. You need to pass just like everyone else. How hard is it? Medical, dental, piss in a cup, answer some questions. You have a presidential pardon, so even if you are technically lying on the exam, you are actually telling the truth."
"Doesn't mean I have to like it."
"No, but you have to do it. Isn't that even some SEAL saying?"
"You don't have to like it, you just have to do it," Reese confirmed.
"Good. Just do it. You are being given a lot of leeway because of what you and Freddie did to save the former president. And even though it's not officially recognized or condoned, there are rumors swirling about you taking out Oliver Gray. The agency and the counterintel folks in particular do not take kindly to turncoats in our midst. They missed Nicholson, Ames, and Gray. It's rumored you gave Gray the sentence most of the agency wishes on traitors."
"I'm answering these as best I can, Vic."
"They're just counterintel and lifestyle poly questions. You know the drill. Your examiner will tell you to come back tomorrow. Play nice. And let's get you to the farm."
"Understood. Just tell John to stop pissing me off."
"Play nice,"
Vic repeated before turning to exit the polygraph room.
"And please don't throw him through the two-way mirror. Those things are more expensive than you think."
When John returned, Reese lowered his heart rate the way he would before taking a long-range sniper shot. He focused on Katie's smile and answered with the correct yes and no answers. It wasn't every day you got to beat a lie detector test. Passing the polygraph meant Nizar Khatan was one step closer to death. 2 days later, Vic sifted through Reese's test results. No drugs in his system, no sexually transmitted diseases, vision and hearing well above agency standards. It was the polygraph and MMPI test that concerned him. The MMPI had resulted in paranoid and aggressive personality traits, which was not totally unexpected, considering what Reese had been through over the past 3 years. Vic shifted his focus from the multiphasic personality inventory to the polygraph. "Is your first name James? False positive. Have you ever lied to get out of trouble? Truthful conclusive. Do you intend to answer these questions truthfully? Deception indicated. Is today Wednesday? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever committed a crime for which you were not caught? Truthful conclusive. Are we in Virginia? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever committed murder? Deception indicated. Are you a United States citizen? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever been part of a group that has wanted to overthrow the United States government? Deception indicated. Have you ever been in the employment of a foreign intelligence service? Truthful conclusive. Have you visited antipolygraph.org to prepare for this examination? Truthful conclusive. Are you sitting down? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever committed murder? Deception indicated. Have you ever plotted to overthrow the U.S. government? Deception indicated. Is the wall white? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever been involved in the torture of enemy combatants? Deception indicated. Have you used illegal drugs you have not mentioned previously? Deception indicated. Did you intentionally falsify information on your application or security paperwork? Deception indicated. Have you ever stolen anything from your previous place of employment? Deception indicated. Have you ever stolen anything worth over $500? Deception indicated. Do you have any undisclosed relationships with foreign nationals? Deception indicated. Have you ever kept a war trophy? Truthful conclusive. Have you ever sold government property? Truthful conclusive. Have you or do you know anyone who brought back enemy weapons from overseas? Deception indicated. Is there anything in your background that would disqualify you from getting this job? Deception indicated. Final polygraph test results, inconclusive.